Greetings and welcome to Lectionary at Lunch from Concordia Seminary in St. Louis. I'm Professor Tom Egger, and I will be looking at the reading from Jeremiah chapter 1, the reading for Epiphany 4, and Professor Jeff Oswald will lead us after that through the reading from Luke 4, beginning at verse 31, I believe. The text from Jeremiah is his call into the ministry. It comes, obviously, right at the beginning of the book of Jeremiah. We get a little bit about his time period in the first three verses, the kings during whose reign he prophesied. We're told that he was the son of Hilkiah, and that he's from among the priests who were at Anatoth, a little city near Jerusalem. And then it goes right into God's conversation with Jeremiah when he called him to be a prophet. These words set up a lot of the themes that will be picked up on in Jeremiah's proclamation as we go through the book of Jeremiah. And so it serves as not only his call into the ministry, but also a wonderful introduction to the book of his prophecies. Let's just jump right in with the text at verse 4. Vayhi devar Yahweh Eli Lamor. And the word of Yahweh was to me, saying. This is a common expression, especially in Jeremiah, that the word of the Lord was to him. Some people comment on the immediacy and the intimacy of the connection between the word and the prophet in this formula. I like to think of this as just a completely generic way of expressing prophetic revelation. It's something so difficult for us to understand that he simply describes this mystery of the word of God being revealed to the prophet as the word of God was to me. Lamor, the last word there, introduces direct discourse. It functions like quotation marks in Hebrew. And so it introduces now what is God's speech to Jeremiah. In verse 5, the second word, you'll notice there's a little circule above it, and there's a carry reading suggested out in the margin. The Masoretes want us to ignore the vav in that word and read it as Ezaraka, which is the imperfect from Yasar, to form. This echoes Isaiah 49, where God is described as forming his servant from the womb. So verse 5, Baterem Ezaraka Babetem Yadatika. The first word there, Baterem, is an adverb meaning before. And after the adverb before, baterem, or other adverbs like az, then, in Hebrew, the imperfect is sometimes used not in a sense, not in its normal future sense, but in a preterite sense. So it has a past time sense here. Before I formed you. Walt Keen O'Connor even suggests that perhaps the use of the imperfect here in this past construction has an incipient sense. So before I began to form you, Vabetem, in the womb, Yadatika, I knew you. This form of the verb to know is imperfect first common singular with a second masculine singular suffix, I knew you. And the sense of yada here is not just that God knew who Jeremiah was or knew the fact of his existence, but there's an experiential knowledge here, a personal acquaintance. He actually knows Jeremiah. He knows him intimately. Second clause there, Uva Betem, again, and before, Tetze Merekem, you came forth. Again, after Baterem here, you have an imperfect, which is acting as a preterite, past tense. And before you came forth, Merekem, from the womb, Hikdashtika, I sanctified you, from Kadash, or I consecrated you, I set you apart. Navi Lagoyim, Natatika, a prophet for the nations I gave you as, or I appointed you, I made you. that last phrase, the direct object of the verb coming first is emphatic. So a prophet to the nations, a Navi Lagoyim, I appointed you. Verse 6, Va'omar, and I said, here you have a Vav consecutive imperfect from Amar, which is hiding the Aleph preformative. That's what Bartelt calls a double duty Aleph. So it's both the imperfect performative and the first letter of the root. And I said, aha, ah, or alas, or oh, just an interjection of surprise or dismay. Aha, Adonai Yahweh. Ah, Adonai Yahweh. Hine lo yadati daber. Behold, I don't know, lo yadati, daber. That's the PL infinitive construct from daber, or to speak. And the sense here in this construction is, I don't know how to do something. So, behold, I don't know how to speak. He, for, Na'ar Anoki, I am a boy, or I am just a lad. I am inexperienced and young. It's interesting here, the way that Yahweh speaks in verse 5 versus the way that Jeremiah speaks in verse 6. In verse 5, Yahweh is emphasizing his actions towards Jeremiah. There is a priority of Yahweh's actions. Before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. So before Jeremiah is even in the picture, God is at work with his purposes here. Before you came forth from the womb, I set you apart, God says. I appointed you as a prophet to the nations. Then Jeremiah chimes in, and the focus is not at all on God's action, but it's very emphatically a focus on himself. And I said, O Lord Yahweh, behold. And what does he want Yahweh to behold? He wants Yahweh to behold him. Consider who you're dealing with here, Yahweh. Behold, I don't know how to speak. I, Anoki, am a lad, Na'ar. Then we come to verse 7. Yahweh replies, Vayomer Yahweh Eli, and Yahweh said to me, Al Tomar Na'ar Anoki. Do not say, the imperative there with all plus the imperfect, acts as a negative imperative, a negative injunction. Do not say, Na'ar Anoki, I am a lad. Ki al kol asher esh lakaka telek. For, here all probably acts as an equivalent to the preposition el with an aleph. Those are sometimes interchangeable in the prophets. For to all which I will send you. Eshlak kaka, from shalak, first person common singular, imperfect, with a ka ending again. So we're used to seeing these now. First person verbs with a ka suffix. God's action towards Jeremiah. We see these forms over and over again here. For to all which I send you, telek, you will go. Va'et kol asher etzavaka, and direct object, everything which I will command you to daber, you will do. Verse 8, another negative injunction, all tira from yare, do not be afraid or do not fear, mipanehem, from the face of them or on account of them. Literally, you could say because of the face of them, but the sense of mipane usually is something like because of or on account of. You wonder maybe in this portion who the them is. There's no them antecedent in the context here. You can look back and you see some kings' names. Perhaps it's the nations, Hagoyim, I appoint you as a prophet to the nations. But the them that Jeremiah would potentially be afraid of is made abundantly clear as you begin to read through the book of Jeremiah, right? It's the people who are kicking him around and putting him in the stocks and throwing him in the pit, and threatening him and plotting against him, all of those who would oppose his prophetic ministry. Do not be afraid of them, Yahweh says. Ki. Why not be afraid? For Itzka ani. I am with you. Or perhaps we might want to supply instead of a present form there, I will be with you. Laha zilika. Here we have a lamed on an infinitive construct of natsal, to rescue or save, in the hifil. And it has a sense of purpose. So, for I am with you in order to rescue or deliver ka, you. Na'um Yahweh, utterance of Yahweh. Verse 9. Vayishlak Yahweh et yado. And Yahweh shalakht his hand. He sent forth his hand, or he stretched out his hand, his yad. Vayaga al pi. And he caused it to touch, from naga, to touch. This here with the patak under the yod in vayaga is a hifil form. So he caused it to touch. Maybe a little more emphatic than just it touched upon my mouth. Although if you look down in the footnote there, you can see that that the Septuagint and the Vulgate both actually have the call there, and it touched all p upon upon my mouth. Vayomer Yahweh Eli, and Yahweh said to me, Hine, Natati Devarai Befika. And Yahweh said to me, Behold, it's our second Hine in this passage. Jeremiah was asking Yahweh to behold him. And God has pointed his attention back to his own activity, to Yahweh's own activity towards Jeremiah, and now emphatically says, You behold, Jeremiah, behold that I have put my words in your mouth. So this is similar in some ways to Isaiah 6, where Isaiah sees Yahweh exalted and seated on the throne, and woe is me, he has his objections, but God sends the seraph to touch his lips with the coal. Here, Jeremiah also has this sense of seeing Yahweh touch his lips, experiencing Yahweh touch his lips, and God himself explains this as the putting of his words in Jeremiah's mouth. Befika, in your mouth. Verse 10. Ra'eh. This is the imperative form of ra'ah. It functions a lot like hine, behold. You could translate it see or look. Again, God is calling attention, emphatic attention, to his own actions towards Jeremiah. This next form here is the hifil, perfect, first common singular, with a U masculine singular suffix. Hifkad tika. I have pakaded you, or I have caused you to pakad. Pakad here can mean to visit, to inspect, to judge. Probably in the hifil here, it means to appoint or entrust. So, behold, I have appointed you. In the perfect here, this is probably a good example of a performative perfect, where God says, I have done something, but he's actually in the midst of doing it right now. So when he says, I have appointed you, it's his way of saying, I'm appointing you right now. Look, I'm appointing you. By saying this, I'm appointing you. It's a perfect which accomplishes what it says. Behold, I am right now appointing you, and the right now is clarified by the following phrase, Hayom Hazeh, this day, all goyim, over the nations. He's already been named a Navi la goyim, a prophet for the nations. Now he's given authority in a sense, all ha goyim, over the nations. Va'al hamam lakot, and over the kingdoms. Over the nations and over the kingdoms. And our pericope ends with six infinitive constructs in a row marked by Lamed that mark the purpose of Jeremiah's appointing. So he's appointed in order to, or for, the following six purposes. Lintos va lintots. You hear the word play there. Lintosh va lintots. The second two are Ula ha'avid va la haros. And the final pair, Livnot va lintoa. Again, a play on words with the first two forms. The final form, V-lin-toa, sounds a lot like lintosh and v-lin-totes. This listing begins with four negative terms, followed by two positive terms. The first verb, natash, lintos, to pluck up, is generally something that would be referred to what you would do to a plant. It means to uproot or to pluck up. But in its actual usage in the Old Testament, it most often occurs in contexts where Yahweh is warning the people towards covenant obedience and away from idolatry so that he doesn't come and natash them from the land, uproot them from the land. The metaphor that's being used there is the metaphor of a plant, or of especially a vineyard. Yahweh is God's vineyard that he has planted in the land. And now Jeremiah's purpose is going to be to come in and through his prophetic proclamation bring about the uprooting of his people. And not only the uprooting of Israel, but in the context of the book as a whole, the uprooting of many nations. The second verb, natatz, means to tear down. And it can mean to pull down or to tear down in any sense. But as you actually look through its occurrence in the Old Testament, it's used over and over again in the Pentateuch and in the historical books for the tearing down of pagan altars and shrines. So when Joshua comes in the conquest and they take over cities, they pull down the pagan altars. When God judges Bethel, they will pull down the altar and the shrine that had been wrongly built there, or at least wrongly used for many centuries. And so there's a sense here that, first of all, of the just physical pulling down of the walls of Jerusalem, this verb, by the way, is also used for that. When the Babylonians come in, they natatz the walls of Jerusalem. They pull them down. But it's interesting to see those two in the broader context of the Old Testament together. The pulling down of the walls of Jerusalem alongside the pulling down of unclean, idolatrous places. Another thing that is natatzed in the Old Testament in Leviticus are houses that are infested with mildew. Right, you try to get rid of the mildew or the disease, the uncleanness on the walls, but if it comes back, you have to natatz the house. Pull the whole thing down. And that's what Yahweh is about to do in the book of Jeremiah leading up to the destruction of the city and the temple and the exile of his people. The second two verbs are a little more generic. The hifil of avad simply means to destroy. Avad in the call means to perish, and the hifil cause to perish or destroy. And the fourth verb, haras, is also to tear down or destroy. It's a synonym with natatz, of natatz, to tear down. The final two positive terms are the infinitive construct of bana, to build up or to build, and nata, to plant. So to build and to plant. So you have the reversal now of the first two verbs. The first two verbs were to uproot. The opposite of that is nata, to plant. And you had to tear down. Now the opposite of that is to build back up. I think it's significant in Jeremiah that there are four negative terms. He certainly, the bulk of his ministry is the proclamation of the coming judgment. But there's also the sense that the good, the positive, the constructive work of God won't come about until the absolute destruction of his people. It's going to be very thorough. Everything's going to be pulled down. Kind of like Jesus says, referring to the second destruction of Jerusalem, not one stone will be left on another. And it's not until that point that these positive verbs will begin to unfold in God's purposes for His people. So what do we do with a text like this? First of all, I just want to name a few other passages that are really worth studying if you're thinking about preaching on this text. That shed a lot of light on this particular pericope. One is Isaiah 49, where God is speaking to His servant, whom He formed from the womb, and who He will make as a light to the nations. Another is Jeremiah 18, where God is the potter, and He's speaking to nations and kingdoms, talking about tearing down and uprooting them, and talking about building them up and planting them, the work of God among the nations. Jeremiah 20, where Jeremiah is beaten and put in stocks and laments his prophetic calling and status and curses the day that he was born. And so you have sort of the human pessimistic view of this positive language of God forming him in the womb from Jeremiah's mouth in Jeremiah 20. Jeremiah 24, good and bad figs. And Jeremiah describes those who have gone into exile as the good figs. They are the ones that God's positive purposes will be realized through, and you'll see these verbs again that come in Jeremiah 1:10, reoccurring in Jeremiah 24. God has a purpose for the exiles, to build them up, not to pull them down, to plant them, not to uproot them. And finally, in Jeremiah 25, you get a big long listing after verse 15 of all the nations that Jeremiah is proclaiming God's word to. His target audience, you could say. And he speaks in that chapter the cup of God's wrath and addresses it to a long listing of nations. He is a prophet for the nations. Note also, in preaching on this text, the idea of two great metaphors that are behind these verbs. I mentioned the vineyard. The other is the city or the temple. So the people are being viewed as either God's vineyard or God's city or temple. They'll either be uprooted or planted as a vineyard, or they'll be built up or pulled down as a city or as a temple. And especially, I think, important as one of the first things we mention as we work through the text, the priority of Yahweh's action. Even though the prophet is integral to the work of Yahweh and his purposes for his people, these are Jeremiah's verbs. Jeremiah, simply by speaking Yahweh's word, is given authority over nations and kingdoms to tear them down and to build them up again. And yet, even though these are his verbs, they have impact only in light of the historical action of Yahweh to judge or to save his people and the nations. And so, it's the connection between Yahweh's words and what between Jeremiah's words and what Yahweh actually is going to do that gives him this authority and this power. His authority and his sufficiency is found in the words of God, which genuinely describe real live divine judgments and real live divine restoration. And one last note, we should mention that ultimately the prophet to the nations, the one in whom God will put his mouth, the fulfillment of Deuteronomy 18:18, and the kind of prophetic ministry described here in Jeremiah 1 is ultimately fulfilled in Jesus Christ, who is the prophet for the nations, and who does come, as John the Baptist warned, in judgment to uproot and to destroy, to exterminate, to tear down, but also for his people to build up and to plant forever. Now we'll listen to Jeff Oswald lead us through Luke chapter 4.